September 25th, and we're glad to be back with you. This is Harry Brown with my friend John B. Chandler, and we have The Money Show. The Money Show, where we talk about anything having to do with money, with finance, with your savings, with investments. And today, in fact, we're going to roam a little bit afield from that because we think this has something to do with your investments. But we're going to talk with you, and you can ask questions by calling 1-800-259-9231 or, in fact, make comments on what we have to say or criticize what we have to say. 1-800-259-9231 or email us at question@harrybrown.org. question@harrybrown.org. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, John Chandler, who's going to introduce today's subject.
Hello, Harry, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm broadcasting today from an altitude of 8,900 feet on the front porch of a log cabin at Vickers Ranch in Lake City, Colorado. I'm surrounded on both sides of me by mountains that are covered with the most intense yellow aspens you can imagine. I'm certainly happy to be here with you this afternoon. And don't worry, I've spent my time up here thinking about money the entire time. And speaking of money, what we're going to be talking about today is something that's fundamental to all of our lives, and that is American business and how that relates to you, your money, your investments, your standard of living. And this comes from last week's program where we were discussing another topic, but the question came up, and that was how to distinguish between, or what is the difference between, greed and profit. And Harry gave an eloquent answer to that question, and part of the answer had to do with businessmen who were accused of gouging, fixing prices, and so forth. And that leads to today's topic, which effectively is going to be in praise of the American business and the American businessman. Standard of living that's enjoyed by you, me, and every other American is due to the products and services supplied to us by American business. It's easy to forget how much we're dependent upon business. The food we eat, the homes we live in, the clothes we wear, the cars we drive, and millions of other things we take for granted are available to us only because business people have arranged to produce them and deliver them to us. Business affects us in hundreds, even thousands of ways, often without our realizing it. Clearly, because we rely on business to so great an extent, American business is one of the most important elements in our lives. Strangely, however, our understanding of business is derived mostly from what we've been taught by people who know very little about business. Our perceptions have been gathered mostly from journalists, teachers, historians, screenwriters, and the like. And very few of these people have any first-hand knowledge of how business operates. Most of what they believe has been learned from others exactly like themselves. People with no direct experience of the things they write about and criticize. The consequence, a great deal of what you are taught and told, and the American public is taught and told about business, is incorrect. Not just or simply incorrect, but very far removed from the reality. The general impression is that business operates in a world apart from the rest of us, in a moral vacuum, the jungle where anything goes. The very expression, that's business, typifies the belief that the standards of morality we take for granted in our personal and social lives have no place in the world of business. Because of this impression that's fostered of business, businessmen are the object of our scorn and the target of vindictive legislation and regulations. And yet it's the businessmen who deliver the food, clothing, entertainment, and luxuries we take for granted. They are the ones whose efforts make America such a prosperous place to live and so attractive to people all over the world. Businessmen are the ones who risk their savings and often lose them. in ventures that, if successful, will give us more of the things we want. Most of them have suffered through 12-hour and 15-hour days, 6 and 7 days a week, through years of deprivation in order to get where they are. Many of them make less money than their employees. But still, a businessman employees assume that he's rich. And many of them think it's okay to lie to him with statements such as, I'm too sick to come into work today. Or even steal from him by saying, oh, they'll never miss this ream of paper, or they'll never miss that. His customers believe he could cut his prices in half and still make a profit. The public believes that the government must restrain him, the businessman, or else the businessman will destroy lives, cities, and the environment in an endless pursuit of money. To deliver the products and services people want, a businessman must overcome many obstacles. Taxes, environmental laws, labor laws, hundreds of other government regulations. It's not just, for example, the taxes that cost, but it's providing the infrastructure to know what taxes to pay, how much to pay, and where to pay them. It's the administrative cost of hiring the lawyers and accountants to figure all this out, and then it's the taxes on top of that. Well, given all the obstacles, it's a wonder that anyone in business makes a profit and that so many products and services are still available to us. It's a truly heroic achievement to overcome all the obstacles and deliver the goods to us. But no one thanks a businessman for facing this ordeal, and certainly no one calls him a hero. So, Harry, now comes the question, and here's where you get to chime in. And that is, the question is why in the world is there such a negative impression of business? Why are so many forces arrayed against business people?
Well, there are many possible answers to this, and it's probably a mixture of several answers. But one of the most prominent ones, I believe, is that you can generally separate people who go out to do things in the world and be more than just employees. You can generally separate those kind of people into two groups. One you might call the doers and the other the reformers. And the doers are people who accept the world the way it is. A businessman accepts the world the way it is. He looks to see what it is that people want. He doesn't try to tell them what they should want. He doesn't try to change their minds about what they should want in life, but he tries to see what they want, accepts that, and then figures out the best way to supply that at a cost that's less than his rivals might charge, and in a way that is more convenient, more user-friendly, whatever. In other words, he's accepting the world as it is and trying to make the most of it. That's the nature of a businessman. And you also find that to be the nature of lawyers and doctors and other people who accept the world as it is and then try to make the most of it. And we'll continue along this line when we come back from this break. Don't go away. These messages are important. And when we finish with them, we'll go ahead and tell you what the other type of individual is.
This is Harry Brown. My book, Fail-Safe Investing, will tell you what you need to know to create your own bulletproof investment portfolio, one that will protect you whatever the future brings, prosperity, inflation, recession, even depression, and it will protect you without your having to predict the future or tinker with the portfolio. Best news of all, at LibertyFree.com, you can download the book for only $9.75. That's right, just $9.75. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it in your easy chair. If you're tired of losing money on your investments, tired of the pressure of looking for the best investments, here's the way to have your own bulletproof portfolio, no matter how big or small your savings. To get a free sample chapter from Failsafe Investing, just go to libertyfree.com right now. That's libertyfree.com.
Well, welcome back. This is Harry Brown with John Chandler, and we're talking today about business. And if you have any comments you want to add, just call us 1-800-259-9231. This is The Money Show, and we welcome questions on anything having to do with money, savings, finance, whatever. Before we went to the break, I said that there are two kinds of people that go into what we might call starring roles as employers or as people who are featured in some way. The doers are people who accept the world as it is, basically businessmen who try to obtain the best possible conditions for themselves, meaning make the most money for themselves by using the world as they see it, catering to the needs and desires that people already have. And doers tend to gravitate to careers in which they can capitalize on that talent for recognizing reality, for actually seeing things as they are and using it. We might think that that's a very simple thing to do, but it isn't. You have to take into consideration the needs and desires of a lot of different people and sort this out and make sure that you're not just running down a false road. It's not just business people who do this, but people in the profession, doctors, lawyers, accountants. People like that all need to see the world exactly as it is. Now, the second class of people are what we might call reformers. These are people who like the idea of changing the world. They think that the world can be improved somehow, either by changing people's thinking or changing the laws, going to the government and getting the government to force people to act as the reformers believe that they should. And reformers tend to gravitate to the careers in which they can influence the acts of people and their thinking. Now, this can include such things, obvious things, as going into politics, of course, or being involved in political organizations, advocacy groups, so forth, trying to encourage legislation that they think will organize society in a way that's better and force people to act in better ways, and so on. But a great deal more of them, many more of these reformers, would enter the communications industry. And communications is a very, very broad field. It includes such things as education, teaching other people in elementary schools, high schools, colleges, wherever. It includes people in the press, journalists who get to write not just about events of the day, but interpret the events of the day. They tend to be writers who write not just nonfiction, but novels and short stories and so on, to get involved in research. And another big field is entertainment and the arts. This is an area that has tremendous influence over the thinking of a great number of people. Now, it isn't necessarily that these reformers go into these fields and say, I'm going to change people's lives. I'm going to make them believe what I believe. But they're there and they can do it. And they do it naturally. And because they are inclined to want to change people's lives, they use the opportunities that they have to do so. And I don't just mean actors who speak out on politics. I'm talking about the way they act, the way they write screenplays, the way that they present reality to the public. And that reality is uniformly bad about business. A good example, you take a sitcom, not a sitcom, but a drama series like Matlock or something of that sort, and if there is a businessman involved in the early scenes, you can pretty well imagine that he's the one that's going to be killed. He's the one that's going to be murdered, because that will present a whole raft of people as suspects. Because he will have wounded so many people, in effect. He will have cheated this person, and he will have gone back on his promise to that person, and he will have climbed over that person to get to the top and so on. It just happens so often that the businessman is the victim simply because the victim has cheated and defrauded so many different people. And that's a staple of business that reformers present to the public. And that's part of the way we learn about it. And we learn about it also in the textbooks in school. We learn that if it hadn't been for government, the Great Depression might still go on now, that government brought us out, business took us into the Depression, and government brought us out. And so this image is just portrayed everywhere where we look. We see this negative image of business. But the fact of the matter is, as John pointed out, it is business that is supplying our needs and wants. Yes, the actors and the writers and these people, the reformers, they also supply things that we need. But these are sort of the icing on the cake. They are part of what makes us a wealthy country, that we can enjoy the arts, that we can enjoy so much entertainment and so on. But our basic needs, our computers, our houses, our food, all of these things, they're supplied by business people who face reality as it is. And I'm not really answering the question of why there is such a negative image of business, but I'm only giving you part of it. There are probably many reasons, and anybody who has any ideas on this, I would be glad to hear them. Just call us at 1-800-259-9231. But basically, it is the people we learn from have a bent of trying to change reality. And part of changing reality would be taking the profit away from businessmen and distributing it to the poor or to the employees or to the government to do good work. And so there is sort of a natural bias against business. John?
Yes, and I should point out that it is through understanding business, how business works, that you can get more from business. It's a way that you can get more of what you want. And if you're employed by a business, understanding the nature of business and how business works can allow you to get a type of job and work at a type of job where you have an opportunity to make more money, have a better salary. It's extremely important to understand the nature of business and how it works, and we'll talk about that at a later time, and that is how you can get more of what you want out of life by understanding the nature of business and how business works. But there is, if you listeners will just recall, all the movies, all the television programs that you've seen, the books you've read, The Robber Baron, The Slumlord, Daddy Warbucks, all of these people, you just think about it. That's how so many people in this world have gained their impression and understanding of business and how it works. And we talked a little bit earlier today about business in a fantasy world. Well, you know, if business actually operates in the fantasy world of the reformers, it would seem that what everyone is saying is that consumers, for example, buy whatever advertisers urge.
Sure.
And if that's the case, then you would wonder, why don't consumers ever run out of money?
Right. Let's talk about that when we come back. This is Harry Brown with John Chandler, and this is The Money Show on the Genesis Network. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
This is Harry Brown. Have you lost money in stocks over the past few years? From 2000 through 2002, the stock market lost a third of its value. But during those 3 years, a bulletproof portfolio gained 9%. And over the past 34 years, such a portfolio gained an average of over 9% per year throughout periods of prosperity, inflation, and recession, with no wide swings in value. My book, Failsafe Investing, shows how you can have that kind of portfolio for yourself. And now you can download the book for only $9.75. You don't have to rely on alleged market wizards or stay up late worrying about your savings. Failsafe Investing will show you how to have the security that you crave. Go to libertyfree.com to see a sample chapter of fail-safe investing, and then start protecting the savings you've worked so hard to acquire. That's libertyfree.com.
Well, welcome back. This is Harry Brown with John Chandler, and before we went to the break, we were talking about the fantasy world that exists. All of these cliche ideas that exist about business that John raised there, that advertisers can advertise anything and people will buy it, which, of course, is ridiculous, because if that were true, why wouldn't you or I just go into business, advertise anything we want, and make a fortune? We know we can't. We know that we might advertise the wrong thing, and so we might not get any results from it, no sales from it. And this leads to the idea, well, of course, you and I, that's one thing. But big companies, they can advertise anything they want, and the money will pour in. Well, tell that to the Ford Motor Company, who came out with a $1 billion investment in the Edsel back in the 1950s. And the Edsel failed despite an advertising campaign, despite all kinds of promotions. I remember I was in the car business at the time, and this was going to be a revolutionary new thing, but it only lasted 2 years, and the Edsel was consigned to the museums of history. Another good example, I'm sitting here with a Coke on my desk, and it's Classic Coke. And you know why they call it Classic Coke? Because but about 25 years ago, 22 years ago, they came out with a new Coke. And boy, did they herald this with all kinds of advertising, promotions, everything you can imagine. I have no idea how much money the Coca-Cola company spent on it. But after, about 6 months or a year at the most, probably after 6 months, they said, no, this is not working so well. People have stopped buying Coca-Cola. So they came out with Classic Coke, and side by side on the shelves of the grocery stores, you saw Classic Coke and New Coke. And then 6 months later, what do you know? The New Coke had disappeared, and the hundreds of millions of dollars that the Coca-Cola company had poured into the New Coke were gone. And so we remain with the Classic Coke, the same formula that Coca-Cola has been using for years and years and years. And Ludwig von Mises once pointed out that people who say that somebody is charging too much for his product, if that's true, then the person who says this ought to be able to go into business, charge less for the product, steal all the business away from the person who's charging too much, and make a small fortune for himself. But nobody ever does it. And the reason nobody ever does it is because it's too hard. And why is it too hard? Because there's a great deal involved. And by the time you have done everything that's involved, this is the price you have to charge. Now, the price may be too high. You may figure out all your costs and figure that the only way you can sell this product is for, say, $13.45, that anything less, you'll lose money on it. But you find that $13.45 is more than people are willing to pay for this product, whatever it happens to be. And so the product fails, as the Edsel fails and the New Coke fails, simply because the demand did not warrant the price that was being charged. In a nutshell, that's what it comes down to. And there's another fallacy that comes up very often, and that is that business can pass on to the consumer any cost that's imposed upon business. In other words, this is you might call a free market fallacy, that some people who actually support the free market will say, well, look, this new 5% tax that the government's going to impose on widgets or whatever it is, business isn't going to pay that. The business will just pass it on to the consumer, and it's the consumer that has to pay that 5% tax. Well, if it's true that business can pass on to the consumer whatever costs are added to the business, whether it be a new tax or a new union agreement that raises labor costs, whatever it may be, as that business can just pass this on to the consumer, then in the absence of some new cost, why doesn't business just raise its price anyway if it can pass on whatever it wants to the consumer? If it can pass on a 5% tax, why doesn't it just pass on a 5% increase in price, even though there is no new tax or no new labor agreement or whatever it may be? The reason they don't is because business cannot make consumers pay. Consumers will run out of money. Consumers don't have an unlimited supply of money to satisfy anything that comes along, whether it's a new tax, a new labor agreement, or just a new desire by business to make more money on their product. Everybody has limited resources, and this is the essence of economics. And it's good that this came up, that we should understand this, that economics is the science or the art of examining how limited resources are distributed in order to maximize desires, unlimited desires. We are born with unlimited desires. We can never satisfy every desire we have. The moment we satisfy one desire, it promotes another desire. It engenders another desire. But our resources are limited. We have limited time. We have limited money. We have limited access to things. We have limited knowledge. Everything is limited. And so whether we realize it or not, all the time we are apportioning those limited resources in the way we think will produce the maximum results and satisfy the maximum desires we have. And this comes back again to the fact that consumers have limited resources and therefore cannot just satisfy any desire that business has to pass on a new cost, a new tax, whatever it may be, to the consumers. And we should understand that. Now, if we understand these things and we understand business, then we will learn, I think, not to expect from business all sorts of things that can't be. Business will do the best it can with the resources it has available, because just like consumers, businessmen are working with limited resources, and they are making decisions daily to figure out how to apportion those resources in order to produce maximum profits for the firm, for the company, which will result eventually in maximum money in the pocket of the owners of the business. And so business is operating in the same economic world that the rest of us are. But it helps to understand that economic world. It helps to understand that there is nothing unlimited in this world, that we are all dealing with limited resources trying to satisfy maximum desires. Now, when we come back, I think that it is important that we try to apply this knowledge that we have discussed in this show, apply this to your personal situation, my personal situation, John's personal situation, how this knowledge of business can help us maximize our own profits, our own returns, our own results, whether we are employees, employers, or what. And we're going to do that when we come back. This is Harry Brown with John Chandler. You got a question? 1-800-259-9231. Stay tuned. Again, Harry Brown here with John Chandler, and we're talking about business today. And as promised before the break, let's talk about how this affects you as an individual and how you can use this. Well, there's a basic principle involved here, and that is that business can succeed only if it satisfies its customers. And even if you have a business that doesn't deal with the public, that is in some kind of secondary business that supplies resources, it's in mining or whatever it may be, still in the final analysis, somebody is paying the bill. somebody outside the company. And the basic principle involved is how can we better satisfy those people so that we get more of them and receive more money. Now, if you're an employee, that's not your responsibility to figure that out, although you may come up with some ideas and make some suggestions to your employer. But the important thing is that you understand what it is your employer is trying to do, what it is that he thinks is going to enhance the business when he asks you to do this or that or whatever it may be. And so the question why becomes very important. Why, what is it that we're trying to accomplish here? And when you ask that question, you should do it, of course, not in a confrontational way, such as to say, you know, why are you asking me to do this? But rather, how can I do this better? How can I help if I understand what it is we're trying to accomplish here? And the more you take an interest in what your employer is trying to do, the more likely that you will be able to satisfy your employer, the more likely you will be to be a valued member of the firm, the more likely you will be the first one to get a raise, the more likely you will be to be the first one to be moved into a position of greater authority. And I think that this is a very important principle to keep in mind. Now, you can't do this every day. You can't, in some way, demonstrate your interest all the time. And in many ways, you're not maybe not dealing with the employer, but you're dealing with somebody, somebody who has a task to fulfill, your squadron leader, in effect, the head of your department, whatever it may be. And so the more you take an interest in what it is that they're trying to accomplish, the more valued you will be as an employee. And, of course, in other situations where you're working for yourself as self-employed, if you try to understand what it is your customer wants, instead of somebody coming in saying, I would like this, all right, good, well, we'll be glad to do it for you. What is it you're trying to accomplish with this, and maybe I can help you do it in a more profitable, efficient way, and so forth. And the more you take an interest in your customer's business and what he's trying to accomplish, the better you are going to be able to serve him, and the more likely he is to want to come back and deal with you the next time. And it all comes down to who's paying the bill and how can I help that person, because there are limited resources, and you better get your hands on as many of them as you can.
Harry, I would like just to add one thing. Having been an entrepreneur businessman and started over the years about, I think, five different businesses, all of which were very successful, I had employees who came to work every day. I had employees who came to work early and left late and so forth. But invariably, the employees who got the raises quickest, who got promoted to management positions, the employees who were able to make more money quicker than any other employees, were the employees who looked at the business to try to figure out where were the income streams coming from. Well, not only where were the profit centers, but where were the income streams. And then try to get yourself associated or situated in such a way that you are helping to try to figure out how to make a greater profit, either saving money, improving sales, but the key was in focusing in on the businessman that you're working for. Where is he making his money? Where is his income coming from, and how can you help him do that better? That is the shortcut to success for working for a businessman. What do you agree with that, Harry? Is that about what you've been saying, but in a little bit different way?
Very definitely. It's a real-world example, and you could duplicate that millions of times around the country with different businesses and different employers and employees. There's another principle that we want to get into because it's very, very important, and it's changing the subject a little. But we need to understand that because people only pay for what they want or need, the result and people only engage in transactions in which they think they are going to improve their situation, that we have a basic principle that both sides profit from an exchange unless somebody is being held at gunpoint. In other words, somebody is being forced to do something either by the government or by a private buccaneer. But if people are voluntarily entering an exchange, then it means they expect to come out better. So both sides profit in a mutually profitable exchange, and that's what takes place daily. Walmart sells you something, and Walmart adds a little to its profit stream, and you get something that you didn't have before that you want more than the money you gave up. And that's something we should always keep in mind. We'll be back right after this break. This is The Money Show, brought to you in part by the Permanent Portfolio Family of Funds.
This is Harry Brown. My book, Fail-Safe Investing, will tell you what you need to know to create your own bulletproof investment portfolio, one that will protect you whatever the future brings, prosperity, inflation, recession, even depression, and it will protect you without your having to predict the future or tinker with the portfolio. Best news of all, at LibertyFree.com, you can download the book for only $9.75. That's right, just $9.75. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it in your easy chair. If you're tired of losing money on your investments, tired of the pressure of looking for the best investments, here's the way to have your own bulletproof portfolio, no matter how big or small your savings. To get a free sample chapter from Fail-Safe Investing, just go to LibertyFree.com right now. That's LibertyFree.com.
Well, welcome back. This is Harry Brown with John Chandler, and this is The Money Show, brought to you in part by the Permanent Portfolio Family of Funds, seeking safety and stability in an uncertain world. And you can get more information about the Permanent Portfolio Fund by going to permanentportfolio.com or calling 1-800-531-5142. That's 1-800-531-5142. John?
Okay, Harry, thanks. I really appreciate you bringing up the Permanent Portfolio Family of Funds. I think it'd be worthwhile anyone who's interested in the permanent portfolio to take a look at that particular alternative. Harry, just to follow up on the last segment and what you were discussing, the point I think you're making, and this is a point that I've found that many people have difficulty digesting, and that's this point, and that is no exchange is ever, quote, equal. No exchange is equal. Now, what does that mean? You always think somebody gets the better end of the deal. Well, that's absolutely not necessarily true. No exchange is equal. When you go in to buy an automobile, the automobile dealer wants your money more than he wants that car. You want that car more than you want your money, or the exchange would never take place. Harry, does that sound like it makes the point of no exchange is equal, or you have another example?
Well, it's not equal in the sense that each of you gets a satisfaction from it, and the satisfaction cannot possibly be equal because you're not the same person with the same desires and the same needs. And it's wonderful the way the market works. All these transactions take place, and they do it without fanfare, without whining, without complaining, without promotion of we need this for the good of the public, or any of this sort of thing that you get when you get into politics. And everything then is absolute necessity. We need this or the country's going to fail, you know, on and on and on. But the free market works its magic quietly in the background. Oh, of course, there's advertising, there's promotion, there's this, that, and the other thing. But we don't have to listen to them if we don't want to. And what we do is seek out what we are interested in. And there are all these different possibilities available to us. It's just absolutely wonderful. And I always think that the essence of the free market is a supermarket. You go in there and all these different brands of ketchup and brands of frozen foods and so forth, and you choose the ones that satisfy you. And it's not one size fits all, which is the case when government decrees that we are going to have this, that, or something else. Everything in government is one size fits all. Everything in the free market is you take your choice, and if you don't find what you want, you just don't buy. You keep your money. And it's just a wonderful thing. And I love shopping in a supermarket. I've told my wife I will always do the shopping because I love it so much. Well, this is Harry Brown with John Chandler and The Money Show. I hope you'll come back next week. We enjoyed talking with you, and we will enjoy it again next week. So stay tuned. Come back. You hear?
Come back, sweet papa.